Join me in Exodus chapter 6. We're going to start at verse number 10. You know the situation so far. Moses and Aaron showed up at God's direction to tell Pharaoh that he needed to let the Israeli people go 3 days into the wilderness for a meeting with their God. And immediately, the response of Pharaoh was, "Who's this Yahweh you're talking about? I don't know a Yahweh, and I'm not going to let those people go." And he turns around and tells his taskmasters, apparently these Israelis have too much time on their hands. Don't give them a supply of straw anymore for the making of the bricks. Make them go out and find it for themselves. But don't put the quota any lower. And, of course, that causes a great problem with the Israeli workers. And they end up getting beat on because they're not making the quota. And the foremen of the Israelis go in, apparently thinking that Pharaoh didn't know this was happening, and complained. And Pharaoh makes it clear. They are not going to get any more straw. They'll have to find it themselves, and the quota will not go down. And the reason, he says, is because you guys are lazy. You are idle. You apparently have too much time to think about going out and doing worship things based on the stupidity of what you're being told from Moses and Aaron. And the last thing that we saw last session was Moses and Aaron being right there at the exit point from this meeting between the Israeli foreman and Pharaoh. And they accused Moses of being the problem. And of course, that upsets Moses. Moses talks to God. And it almost looks as if everything is worse now than it was before Moses arrived on the scene. Now, verse 10. We are ready for Moses and Aaron to go back to Pharaoh a second time. And it says this. So, he who is, remember that's the divine name in a very literal English phrase. So, he who is said to Moses, "You go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the people of Israel go out of his land." But Moses said to he who is, "Behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me? For I am of uncircumcised lips." So Moses feels that he is the problem here, as he communicated before he took the job. I cannot speak in a way to convince people to go along with this. The Israelis are angry because I convinced them to do this, and Pharaoh won't listen to me either. And the last part of verse 12 does hint, again, of some speech impediment, I think, that Moses may have had that might have made him less persuasive in certain contexts. Now, Aaron is supposed to be doing the bulk of the speaking here. So Moses has fallen back on a topic that's already been dealt with. Continuing with more from God. Verse 13, "But he who is spoke to Moses and Aaron." Remember, they are a package deal. They are a team. Moses gets the information from God. He tells Aaron what to say and do. And then Aaron is the public persona. He is the public person doing and saying the things that need to be done and said. So he who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the people of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And then suddenly, in the midst of the narrative, we have the insertion of a genealogy. And my best guess is that someone other than Moses put it here. Because this is to just help readers understand where Moses and Aaron fit into the genealogical hierarchy of the Israeli people. And so, in verse 14, we start not with Moses' family tree, but two other family trees beyond the Moses family tree. It says, these are the heads of their father's houses, the sons of Reuben. Remember, he is the eldest of the 12 sons of Israel, although he lost the firstborn privilege. His sons were Hanok, Palu, Hezron, Carmi. These are the clans of Reuben. And we talked about the idea that the initial generations that came into the land of Egypt, and in some cases, some additions that were born shortly after they came into the land of Egypt, these become the heads, the named heads of clans and family groups. And more than likely, they are represented by the number 70 in the Sanhedrin. All right, so the sons of Simeon in verse 15, Yemuel, Yamin, Ohad, Zakin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the clans of Shimeon. And you can find those exact same details in genealogies elsewhere. But what the purpose of this insertion is to then talk about the Levitical line. That's the line of Moses and Aaron. So verse 16, these are the names of the sons of Lewi, or Levi, according to their generations, Gershon, Kohat, Merari. Now the years of the life of Lewi being 137 years, and that helps us understand that Levi lived longer than Joseph, Levi actually lived in Egypt beyond the dynasty that Joseph served. Verse 17, the sons of Gershon, Libni, and Shimei, by their clans, the sons of Kohath, and this is the one that we're most interested in, Amram, pay attention to that name, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Now, the years of the life of Kohath being 133 years. Now, we don't know when they were born, as in the age of their father. So these genealogical notations of how long these guys lived just kind of helps us have a sense that these guys are still living into their second century. And so that's why when God told Abraham that the Israelites would be in Egypt for 400 years, a little over that, and four generations, so 100 years per generation, that's a long generation, a long-lived generation. And so we can see those numbers here. Now, the sons of Merari, Mahli, Mushi, these are the clans of the Levites according to their generations. Now we zero in on a specific family of the Levites. Amram took as his wife Jochebed, his father's sister. And that's an artifact of living so long and having kids late in your first century, so that Amram ends up marrying his aunt. Now, we didn't worry about that because you know, the gene pool is still so deep and broad, that's not a problem yet. Now, she bore Aaron, that's the Aaron of our story, and Moshe, or Moses. Now, the years of the life of Amram being 137 years, so another good long life. The sons of Izhar, Korah, who comes up into a story later, Nepheg and Zikri, the sons of Uziel, Mishael, Elzaphan, and Shithri. Now, Aaron took as his wife Elishaba, the daughter of Aminadab, and the sister of Nashan. Now, this Nashan, we will find out later, is from the Judah tribe, I believe. And she bore him Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. The sons of Korah, Asir, Elkanah, and Abisaphath. These are the clans of the Korahites. Now, Eleazar, Aaron's son, took as his wife one of the daughters of Putiel, and she bore him Phinehas. Now, Phinehas becomes important during the time of Joshua and the conquest of the Promised Land. And so now we're seeing that this insertion seems to be from a time after Moses, even. These are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites by their clans. So now we're done with the insertion of the family tree to help everybody understand that Moses and Aaron were very significant in the beginning of Israel's history as a nation, their exodus from Egypt, but that Aaron's line was also significant in the time of entry into the Promised Land. Now we can return to the narrative. Verse 26. These are the Aaron and Moses to whom he who is had said, bring out the people of Israel from the land of Egypt by their hosts. That is, by their organized clans and family groups, their tribal designations. It was they who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, about bringing out the people of Israel from Egypt. This Moses, this Aaron. Now, on the day when he who is spoke to Moses in the land of Egypt, he who is said to Moses, I am he who is. Now, he's using the divine name, Yahweh, as a reminder that he has no beginning, he has no end, he just is. He is the creator God that's always been there. And so Moses needs to do what he's told. I am he who is. Tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say to you. But Moses said to he who is, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. How will Pharaoh listen to me? Now that's where we have the clear overlap from the narrative right before the little excursus, the little interruption by the genealogy. So basically, and to return to our story, Moses had just said, I can't speak well. That's why they're not listening to me. Israelis won't listen to me. Why would Pharaoh listen to me? Verse 1 of chapter 7. He who is said to Moses, see, I have made you like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron will be your prophet. So he gives him a simile that basically the original idea was that Moses would be God's prophet speaking to Pharaoh. But Moses feels that he can't verbalize well. So God says, all right, we'll do it this way. I'll talk to you, and then you will talk to Moses or to Aaron like you are God, and Moses and Aaron is your prophet. That's how we'll work it. So this is just a repeat of something that God had already told Moses on the day of his commissioning. But Moses, as we will find out as we keep reading this, he is a human being. He is like us. He's got issues that he works through over time. Some moments he is feeling low and uncertain, and other moments he is feeling confident and full of God's power. That's just the way it works with people being used by God. And so if you think about the book of James, that point gets made in the fifth chapter, that it's the prayer of righteous people is effective, regardless of them being people with their little foibles and their good days and their bad days. And he gives the example of the prophet Elijah. He says, Elijah was a man just like all of us, good days and bad days. And that shows up in the text, by the way, when we read the story of Elijah. But when he prayed in faith, it didn't rain for 3.5 years. And then when he prayed in faith, eventually, after several sessions, it rained. So I just like to remind everybody from time to time, the Bible is a story about how the God of the universe uses regular people to get his stuff done. And so all of us regular people need to take hope in that. All right, back to the text. Verse number 2. You shall speak all that I command you, and your brother Aaron shall tell Pharaoh to let the people of Israel go out of his land. So that's the deal, Moses. I speak to you, you speak to Aaron, Aaron speaks to Pharaoh. But, little warning here, and this happens later in the story, not immediately. There's a little blurb that happens. I think it's 6th or 7th plague, somewhere in there, that God has to do this. Verse 3. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart. Now, Pharaoh will start out hardening his own heart. And hardening his own heart, having a hard heart, having a hard heart. But there comes a moment at which it looks like he's going to have a brief willingness to just let it all go. And at that point, God's not done in his judgment of Egypt and particularly the Egyptian gods. And so he hardens Pharaoh's heart. After which Pharaoh basically gets back to hardening his own heart again. Moses is given the heads up about that. I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and though I multiply my signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, Pharaoh will not listen to you. Now, remember, Moses was just basically saying, Israel's not listening to me. Why would Pharaoh listen to me? And God's response is, Moses, pay attention. He's not going to listen to you. That's the point. There'll be a moment where I'll kind of force the issue a little bit, but he is going to be a hard case. You need to be ready for that. And signs or wonders are going to be demonstrated to the Israelis because of this reality. So verse 4 again. Pharaoh will not listen to you. Then I will lay my hand on Egypt and bring my hosts, my big groups, my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great acts of judgment. So this is not random stuff that God is doing here. God is punishing the Egyptian hierarchy for their mistreatment of the Israeli people during the time that they've been slaves. He is also punishing them for their sinful attention to false deities. Verse 5, the Egyptians shall know that I am he who is, when I stretch out my hand against Egypt and bring out the people of Israel from among them. Verse 6, Moses and Aaron did so. They did just as he who is commanded them. And then a little chronological notation. Now, Moses was 80 years old when this is all happening at the time of the Exodus. And Aaron, 83 years old when they spoke to Pharaoh. So that's how we know that Aaron is 3 years older than Moses. And my suspicion is that Miriam is at least 3 years older than Aaron, so that she's the elder sister. And that would match with the idea of her being about 6 years old whenever she followed Moses' little sealed up cradle floating amongst the papyrus reeds, and made sure that when the daughter of Pharaoh found Moses and was looking to raise him as her own, that she could recommend Moses' biological mother as his wet nurse. And so that age of about six is the minimal age, I think, for her at the time of that nativity story for Moses. Back to the text, verse 8. Then he who is said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, well, prove yourselves by working a miracle, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff, cast it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent. Now you remember, God had given that sign to Moses to show to the Israeli leadership. It was his number one sign. The second one was the hand being turned leprous and then back again. And then the third sign was to take some water and turn it bloody. So the plan has been tweaked a little bit, where Moses is standing by and signaling when to do things. It's going to be Aaron that actually performs and verbalizes stuff. And the staff is still the power staff of Moses. It ends up being passed back and forth between Aaron and Moses, evidently. And eventually it will end up being put into the Ark of the Covenant and then at some point disappears from history. Verse number 10. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as he who is commanded. Aaron cast down his staff before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Now, more than likely, and I've said this before, it was a cobra, the type of cobra that is there in Egypt. And no doubt it was very impressive for Pharaoh to see that happen right in front of his eyes. But then he decides to see whether or not it's unique. So Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers. Now, these wise men are the intellects in the nation. The sorcerers are those that tap into the spirit world. And so these guys come out and they are told, perhaps even shown, what has just happened. And they also did the same by their secret arts. For each man cast down his staff, and they became serpents. Now, immediately, you're going to want to know, was that real? Or were they playing a magician's trick, you know, a sleight of hand, like people in Vegas do, and do amazing things? And I honestly don't know the answer to that. It is possible that they were doing sleight of hand. We know that there are plenty of people in positions of confidence because they're able to pull off such things and look really impressive. But we also know that some people are tapped into the spirit world, and the spirit world has power, signs and wonders. And so I honestly don't know. Is this the power of persuasion and misdirection, or is it the power of Satan? But in the end, it doesn't matter, because I love this next part. Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs, and then evidently he picked it up and it turned back into a staff. So bye-bye, serpent staffs of the sorcerers of the Egyptian court. I would have loved to see their reaction. Whether it was sleight of hand or supernatural demonic power, wouldn't matter. They would have been shocked at that new development. But Pharaoh is the one that has to be hit with all this stuff. What does he think? Well, verse 13 says, "Still, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he would not listen to them, as he who is had said." So Pharaoh, whom I think is Thutmose III, is like, yeah, whatever. There is no way in the world he is going to let a little staff snake trick stop him from keeping a huge number of slaves. It's just not going to happen. And so with that, we move to what is counted as the first of the 10 plagues of Egypt. So I want you to mark your place right there for verse number 14, because that's where we're coming back to the next time we're into the Word.